Thank you for joining me. I'm Kimberly Rogers, and you're listening to the Torah portion for February 15 and 16, 2013, from sundown to sundown. This teaching is brought to you by themessianicmessage.com, themessianicmessage.com. I hope that you enjoy this teaching. And before we get started, let's say a word of prayer. Baruch atah Yehovah Eloheinu Melech haolam. Blessed are you, O Lord our God, King of the universe, Creator of all things. Holy are you, and holy is your name. I thank you, Abba, for your word, and I just pray that your word will go forth and not come back void. And I pray that anything that speaks out of my own brain, that it would just fall dead to the ground and would die. Let only your word flourish, Abba. I pray that your will be done in all of our hearts on this Shabbat. I pray this in the name of Yeshua. Amen. Well, we have just had, and I believe it was in one day, the giving of the Ten Commandments, followed quickly by giving of the ordinances. And now, at the end of that same day, Moses, Aaron, Joshua, and others have climbed to a certain point on Mount Sinai, where then Moses and Joshua left them behind, and Moses climbed further on alone and disappeared into the cloud. So now Moses is on Mount Sinai inside that cloud getting instructions from Jehovah. And he will be up there for 40 nights and days. In chapter 32, which is the Torah portion Kitisa, we will see that as the time draws near to the end of that 40-day period, the children of Israel will rebel with the golden calf. But the seeds of that rebellion are sown in this Torah portion. I'll get to that in a minute. The tabernacle was built immediately after the children of Israel received the ordinances for two reasons. First, to stop them from offering sacrifices in the way that had always been done by all believers in Jehovah prior to that, you know, Adam, Noah, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. And then the way that the children of Israel did in Egypt when they used the pagan household threshold model. Let's take a look at that in Deuteronomy chapter 12, verses 11 to 13. Then there shall be a place which the Lord your God shall choose to cause his name to dwell there. There shall you bring all that I command you, your burnt offerings and your sacrifices, your tithes and the heave offering of your hand, and all your choice vows which you vow to the Lord. And you shall rejoice before the Lord your God, you and your sons and your daughters and your men servants and your maid servants, and the Levite that is within your gates, forasmuch as he has no part nor inheritance with you. Take heed to yourself that you offer not your burnt offerings in every place that you see. So there in Deuteronomy, the Lord is reiterating the reason that the tabernacle was built, so that there would be a place that would go among them as they were in the wilderness, and then later on there would be a spot on the earth where he would choose to cause his name to dwell there, so that they would no longer practice the pagan model of sacrificing. And then second, the reason that the tabernacle was built immediately after the children of Israel received the ordinances was to provide them security. The tabernacle being among them was the way the nations surrounding them knew Jehovah was with them. And it was the way that the children of Israel also knew that Jehovah was with them. So the building of the tabernacle was also a security issue. Now we have two scriptures on this issue, and it has to do with him going before them. Exodus 32, verse 34, "Therefore now go, lead the people to the place of which I have spoken to you. Behold, my angel shall go before you. Nevertheless, in the day when I visit, I will visit their sin upon them." And in Deuteronomy 31 verse 8, he gave this promise to the children of Israel before they crossed into Israel. And the Lord, he is it that does go before you. He will be with you. He will not fail you nor forsake you. Fear not, neither be dismayed. So we see that the tabernacle was the security that the surrounding nations would see, and that the children of Israel would understand that the Lord was with them. But I'm going to do more on that a little bit later as well. What does it mean that the tabernacle is a representation of the human body? We often hear, especially in this Torah portion, that the human body is represented there in the tabernacle. Well, it is that we are constructed in such a way in our bodies that makes us have to go deeper inside our hearts to find the Spirit living there. So our bodies are constructed like the tabernacle, or the tabernacle is constructed like our bodies. I like that first way better, because the tabernacle that was built is the pattern of what's in the heavenlies, and that came before our bodies. So our bodies are constructed in that same manner, which makes us have to go deep inside of ourselves to find the Spirit living there. Jehovah's Shekinah dwelt in the most inner part of the tabernacle, and that's exactly where he dwells in us, too, our most inner part of us, which is what we call our heart. And again, more on that later. By the time we get done with this Torah portion, it will all be wrapped up, I promise. But it is a challenge for us to get to the heart of ourselves, because our hearts are evil continually, correct? Right from the beginning, we learn that the thoughts of man's heart was only evil continually. And even in Yeshua's day and to the end of Revelation, we learn that the heart is evil. And so let's go to Genesis chapter 6, verse 5. And God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. Now, that means that when we go into our inner sanctuary, we're going in there to face some darkness, because our hearts are darkness. But it is our job to prepare ourselves like priests in order to go into this dark place to unveil His Spirit in us, so that it shines forth and causes the light to make the darkness flee. That's because light and darkness do not have any use for each other. If there is light, the darkness must flee. Now, the Lord said that He wants to dwell among us and not just in that building. That was the purpose of the tabernacle. In Exodus chapter 25, verse 8, He says, Let them make me a sanctuary that I may dwell among them. So, for some reason, Jehovah desires to dwell with us, and the tabernacle was how He dwelled among His bride. He dwelled with His bride, or among the people who are His bride. His original intention was for His Spirit to indwell individuals. It was not for Him to indwell a building. But you see, their spirit rejected Him when they removed themselves from the mountain. In Egypt, they had been used to, you know, the priesthood model, where the firstborns of each family were the mediators between themselves and their deities. Now, He's wanting to dwell inside of them, as He said that in the kingdom that He will put His Spirit in us. And so that was what He intended there to begin with. So now Jehovah wants to change that pagan model. He wants them not to have a priesthood to mediate between themselves and him, except for the fact that they removed themselves from the mountain, and then he had to give a priesthood to them. What he wanted was for them each to be a priest, with his spirit dwelling in them, so that he could have direct communication with them. And he is going to try to get this back with them. We're going to see later on with Moses and the rock, when Moses is supposed to teach them to communicate directly with the Lord. But the tabernacle is a physical look at a spiritual principle that Jehovah wants us to understand. And that principle is that his spirit within us is to shine from the place that is the deepest, darkest recesses of ourselves outward into the world, because when his light fills up our deepest, darkest recesses, it will have no problem shining externally into the world. Now in Exodus 26 verse 4, it says this, "And you shall make loops of blue upon the edge of the one curtain from the selvage in the coupling, and likewise you shall make in the uttermost edge of another curtain in the coupling of the second." Now, there's a reference there to loops of blue. And some have said that there may be a connection between those loops of blue and the tzitzit that we're going to be given instructions to wear. Those tzitzit literally are, in Hebrew, tzitzit. But these loops of blue are called lulaah, and they literally mean a loop, as in using a loop to attach curtains to a hook. The root word of lulaah is lul, and it means a spiral step or a winding stair. And so that word there is Strong's 3883, lul. And the word for loop in Exodus 26 verse 4 is lulaah, and it is Strong's 3924. Now, lulaah are not the same thing as fringes or tzitzit on our garments, except for two important details, the placement and the blue color. The placement is on the selvage. The selvage is obviously the edge of the garment. And in Numbers 15:38, it says to make those tzitzit in the borders, or the kanaf, which is the edge of our garments. So we can see that the placement on the tabernacle is the same placement that he's going to later tell us where to put our fringes, our tzitzit. And then the other thing is that both the tzitzit and these lulaah, these loops, have the same color blue in them. That word is Strong's 8504, and it's tekeleth, and it is the cerulean muscle that was used to get that blue color out of it. And that blue color is what is in both the loop on the side of the tabernacle and the blue cord in our fringes, in our tzitzit. And also, here's an interesting tidbit that I learned this year. From the air, if you were looking down over the tabernacle from an aerial view, this thing that he's describing here to build, the thing that has the loops, that looks like a huppah. It also, they say, resembles a tallit, which would be, if it's a tallit or a huppah, both of them serve the same function. That's a constant reminder of the marriage covenant that the children of Israel have with Jehovah. Now, earlier I said that this Torah portion has the seed of rebellion. And I'm going to go back to chapter 25, verse 1, and we're going to start talking about that. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the children of Israel that they bring me an offering. Of every man that gives it willingly with his heart, you shall take my offering." Well, first of all, in order to understand how this seed of rebellion is sown right here in this Torah portion, we need to understand what this offering is. It is a free will offering. And where does it come from? Well, it comes from the wealth that they got in Egypt. Let's take a look at Exodus chapter 12, verse 35. "And the children of Israel did according to the word of Moses, and they borrowed of the Egyptians jewels of silver, jewels of gold, and raiment." So, this wealth that they got in Egypt, we have to ask ourselves, was that wealth theirs? Because, you know, they went and got it, right? So was it theirs then and was never more to be used for anything else but their own pleasure? Or was it that Jehovah gave them the ability to get that, and that ultimately what they got in Egypt belonged to the Lord? Well, let's go to Deuteronomy chapter 8, verse 18. "But you shall remember the Lord your God, for it is He that gives you power to get wealth, that He may establish His covenant, which He swore to your fathers as it is to this day." So you see, the wealth that they got in Egypt, all that gold and silver and raiment and everything that they brought out of there with them, that was for the purpose of the Lord. And it was for the purpose of them being able to give the free will offering. And so that stuff that came out of Egypt with them was the same stuff that Jehovah is now saying, take an offering. You know, Jehovah decides how we are to use the resources He gives us the power to obtain. Those resources are for the uplifting and edification of our community, you know, the body, our community, not just in our physical local area, but the whole body of Yeshua. So those who gave free will offerings, those who came forward and said, "We want to give this back," revealed their heart toward Jehovah in that they knew everything belongs to Him and they are willing to do whatever He wants with it. Now, the golden calf incident ties this in because the people who did not give of that free will offering were likely the same ones who had that all left, the gold, the silver. Remember the golden earrings that they used to make the golden calf? Where do you think they came from? Well, they probably came from Exodus 12:35 when they went to their neighbors and borrowed, remember? Because they were slaves. They were being oppressed. And do you think that they were wealthy of themselves? No. That's why the Lord said, go get the stuff from your neighbors. But they put that stuff in their ears, and when it came time for the Lord to need it as a free will offering, some of them withheld it, didn't they? And then they used it to make a golden calf. Now, this golden calf incident also ties into their security, because the children of Israel were looking for their idea of a god to go before them as they faced their enemies moving into Israel. You see, they had this notion of what it would mean to have a god to go before them. Remember, I read those scriptures earlier where He says that He is going to go before. And you'll remember that at the end of the golden calf incident, that was the reassurance that He gave them. It says in Exodus chapter 32, verse 34, "Therefore now go, lead the people to the place of which I have spoken to you. Behold, my angel shall go before you. Nevertheless, in the day when I visit, I will visit their sin upon them." So this was a big security issue to them as well. It was both a heart issue of giving back to the Lord what he had given to them, their willingness to do that, and then it was also about the fear that was in their heart over the security issue. So, you see, the tabernacle being built had to do with his presence dwelling with them and their security and him setting up his authority regarding how they would worship him moving forward forever into the future. Now let's take a look at these offerings. Exodus chapter 25, verse 3. "And this is the offering which you shall take of them, gold and silver and brass, and blue and purple and scarlet and fine linen and goat's hair." Well, that just seems kind of out of place, right? Because all of the gold, the silver, the brass, that's all, metals, precious metals, especially with the gold and silver, and the blue, purple, and scarlet, and fine linen, that we understand that those are, precious items, but goat's hair, that's, a precious item that's on the top of Jehovah's list. Well, let's take a look at that word goat's hair, because the word hair is not translated there correctly. It just says, "and goats." But the Strong's word there is 5795, and it's A's. And it means a she-goat. But when it's being used in context of garment, they will translate it or understand it as being the goat's hair and not the goat, because we can't wear goats, so we have this translated here as goat's hair, which does make sense in the sense of English, because English is a very different language and we need everything to be specified because we have a Greek mindset and we tend to want to not look at context. And so the translator put the word hair there. Now, a she-goat is A's. It's, again, 5795. But a male goat or a he-goat is Strong's 8163, Sa'er. And so the goat's hair here is from a female goat. So he's asking for a female goat's hair. So what does goat's hair have to do with the tabernacle? Well, goat's hair is what Jacob used to impersonate Esau. But in that instance, it is the kids or the children of the A's or the she-goats that is used. Their hair is what was used to impersonate Esau. But the reason that I believe that Jehovah asked for the goat's hair to be among the first items that was gathered for the free will offering is because Esau was in rebellion, and the children of Israel, for the most part, here are in rebellion. And certainly not every one among them was in rebellion, but as a nation in its entirety they were. So the goat's hair was part of the tabernacle. It was intended to be a reminder of their spiritual state of rebellion. Exodus chapter 25, verse 8, "And let them make me a sanctuary that I may dwell among them. According to all that I show you, after the pattern of the tabernacle and the pattern of all the instruments thereof, even so shall you make it." Now the building of the furniture begins, but the ark is first. Why does the Lord build furniture first, and why does he build the ark first? You know, most people, you get your house and then you get your furniture, right? That's the way humans generally do this. You get the house and then you fill up the house. But the Lord got the furniture and built the tabernacle around the furniture. So this is a reinforcement of the principle that our walk with Him comes from the inside out. If we have what it takes on the inside, then the outer thing, the external thing, the body will take care of itself, because people will see what's on the inside of us shining through to the outside of us. Now, let's look at why he built the ark first. Well, the ark represents the heart. And so the first thing that you want to do if you have a body is you want to have a heart, right? Well, most people would say you want to have a mind. But you know, in Hebrew thinking, the heart and the mind are the same thing. Jehovah will rule with his intellect from the heart or innermost place of the tabernacle. So we're going to have to learn to understand this word heart or lev in Hebrew. In one website that I found online, I found this statement. New findings show the heart, our emotional state, and our mind, the intellect, may not be separate, but are two words for one thing. Now see, this is coming out in kind of a scientific manner. But in another website that I looked at, this is what it says. In biblical Hebrew, heart or lev can have these meanings and is commonly used to mean the total personality of a person, which is most particularly for the inner self, what it means to be human, you know, that personality or that inclination. That's the first thing that it means. The second thing that it means is the intellect or rational thought. In English, we say it's the brain. Lev also means our memory. It means our emotions. Our lev also means our desire, our will, our determination, and lev also means courage. I found this on ancient-hebrew.org, and it says, to the ancient Hebrews, the heart was the mind, including all thoughts and emotions. To the Hebrews, emotions were thought forms. When we are told to love God with all our heart, as in Deuteronomy 6:5, it is not speaking of an emotional love, but to keep our emotions and all our thoughts working for Him. The first picture in this Hebrew word lev is the lamed, which is a shepherd's staff, and it represents the authority of the shepherd over his flock. The second letter is the picture of the floor plan. It is the bait, the house of the nomadic tent, you see. It is the floor plan of the nomadic tent, and it represents the idea of being inside it as the family, you know, that resides within the tent. And when the word lev is combined, lamed and the bait, which has the V sound, when those two letters are combined to make the word lev or heart, what it really means is the authority within. So Jehovah will rule with his intellect from the heart or innermost place of the tabernacle. And the ark is his seat, his chair in the house. And then comes the table. Let's go to Exodus chapter 25, verse 23. You shall also make a table of shittim wood. 2 cubits shall be the length thereof, and a cubit the breadth thereof, and a cubit and a half the height thereof. So on the table go these things: Exodus chapter 25, verse 29. And you shall make the dishes thereof, and spoons thereof, and covers thereof, and bowls thereof, to cover withal. Of pure gold shall you make them. So you see, the table and his dishes are always there for us to serve him who dwells in the innermost part of us. These, the table and the dishes and the bowls and such, those are parts of us too. And there is a principle involved here in that these express our willingness to serve and not our will. Let me explain the difference. Will is part of the heart. It is the part that comes from the ark in our mind/heart. But willingness is actually our coming to the table and using the dishes and other implements to serve him, and making sure that we use them to serve him and not ourselves, as they did with that free will offering. You know, those folks that didn't give the free will offering, but then later used the gold to make the golden calf. That's how that happens. When we don't serve him, we're going to serve ourselves. The ark and the showbread table are both overlaid with gold to signify the purity with which we are to approach him, because he is pure. That gold expresses both his purity and our attitude of purity when we approach. Exodus chapter 25, verse 37. And you shall make the seven lamps thereof, and they shall light the lamps thereof, that they may give light over against it. Now, we don't use that old English phrase anymore, over against. So in the Scriptures 1998 version, it says this: And you shall make seven lamps for it, and they shall mount its lamps so that they give light in front of it. Now, people have often asked, how could the menorah direct light, how could those lamps direct the light into the front of the menorah? Wouldn't the light glow all the way around? Well, there is a way. You see, the little ancient pots that they used looked like little lamps. They had a little handle on one side and kind of an oval-shaped body with a spout on the other side. If you can imagine what I'm saying, it looks just like a kind of little fancy teapot almost. And they put the wick down in that spout, and then the light would shine forward. That concept came to us today by Batya from our group, and I can see where she got that, because I've seen those little lamps. And of course, that little flame would then be in front of the menorah as that wick and the flame stuck out of that spout. And that would direct the light into the front. His light that way into the front of us is intended to go before us. Remember, we've earlier talked about that he's going to go before us. Well, his light now in front of the menorah goes before us. And that is where we're to walk. We're to walk in that light. Exodus 26:15. And you shall make boards for the tabernacle of shittim wood standing up. 10 cubits shall be the length of a board, and a cubit and a half shall be the breadth of one board. 2 tenons shall there be in one board, set in order one against another. Thus you shall make for all the boards of the tabernacle. And you shall make the boards for the tabernacle, 20 boards on the south side southward. And you shall make 40 sockets of silver under the 20 boards, 2 sockets under one board for his 2 tenons, and 2 sockets under another board for his 2 tenons. And for the second side of the tabernacle on the north side there shall be 20 boards, and there 40 sockets of silver, 2 sockets under one board, and 2 sockets under another board. For the sides of the tabernacle westward you shall make 6 boards, and 2 boards shall you make for the corners of the tabernacle in the 2 sides, and they shall be coupled together beneath, and they shall be coupled together above the head of it unto one ring. Thus shall it be for them both, they shall be for the 2 corners. And they shall be 8 boards, and their sockets of silver, 16 sockets, 2 sockets under one board, and 2 sockets under another board. So what are we looking at here? Well, there are 48 upright boards, and those equal the number of ribs of a married couple reclining. Notice that the tabernacle is built in a reclining attitude. That's because the principle of that is that the king is relaxing with his queen. They are reclining together. You see, the Lord wants to have this kind of relaxing, intimate relationship with his queen, with his bride. And so those 48 upright boards stand up just like human ribs. Exodus 27 verse 1. And you shall make an altar of shittim wood, 5 cubits long and 5 cubits abroad. The altar shall be 4 square, and the height thereof shall be 3 cubits. The altar is the place where his food is prepared, and his bride, the priesthood, prepares it for him. The details given in this Torah portion regarding the tabernacle have as its purpose for us to understand that, number one, he hides nothing from us ultimately, and number two, he wants our participation in making this marriage work, and number three, he has all authority in how his house will be set up and operate and how we get to approach him. He wants to dwell with his people, but we must first meet certain standards, and those standards start with our willingness to give our heart. Our free will offering is our heart. Shabbat Shalom.